You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
All right, welcome in, and as soon as I can find my overlay here, I'll get us up. There we are. I don't claim to be the expert that Sarah is or any of these other people are, but anyway, once again, hey, this is the Big O Jerry Ostrowski. Thanks for joining us. This is Line to Gain here on the Buffalo Rumblings Vidcast Network, and Sarah can't make it this week, so I brought in an ace. I brought in my man from Locked On Bills, Locked On Scouting. You guys know him as the great and powerful Joe Marino. He was kind enough to join us. I mean, I got a regular job, and I do this kind of as a hobby. This is Joe's world, and he puts a ton of time into his vidcasts and podcasts and does a ton of work on it. So I'm just honored that he would spend the time with us tonight here on the Line to Gain show. And, Joe, what's going on, man? I appreciate you.
Jerry-O, it's good to be on with you, man. And you say the word honored. I'm honored to be on with you. You're one of my favorite Bills growing up. And I have a stat. I don't know if it's true or not, but I think it might be true. And it's about you.
All right.
Because I think you had one of the most unheralded career of any NFL football players in the history of the league. How many people can say that they were a primary starter for multiple seasons at center, guard, and tackle? And you had two of those at each spot. You might be one of one. So it's an honor for me to be talking to you, one of the most versatile offensive linemen in the history of the NFL.
Well, I appreciate that. And I think that, especially in nowadays football, and you know this from the college scouting world and all that, and write up evals on players, versatility is a big deal. And one of the things I was blessed with in college was we did not play a true right side and a true left side. We played quick and strong. So we flipped offensive linemen to the formation. So I played right side and left side my entire college career, and I played at guard and tackle. So I had experience there. Picked up the center thing when I was on the practice squad. It kind of was one of those deals. I got bored. I was on the practice squad for about a year and a half, and you know, after a while, you just get sick of playing guard all the time or tackle. So I was like, hey, man, give me the ball and start snapping. And little known fact, I actually had a chance before I went to Buffalo. I went to Atlanta when they released me. I ended up on that Buffalo roster with about six games left of the last Super Bowl year. And earlier that season before I went to Atlanta, Buffalo wanted to sign me, and I chose not to go to Buffalo for some dumb reason. But that's a whole nother story. But I actually did a workout in Foxborough at center for Bill Parcells. And my Bill Parcells story is about as cool as it gets. No Parcells, because I grew up in Philly, was an Eagles fan, obviously hated the Giants, but always respected Bill, even though, you know, you don't like him because he coaches the Giants. But after the workout was over, he said, hey, come up to my office. I want to talk to you. And when I would go to his office, he had his assistant, he knew where I was from, he had his assistant go out and get two cheesesteaks. He got two cheesesteaks, so that's from Philly. He got two cheesesteaks, drinks, chips, the whole nine yards. And I sat in Bill Parcells' office eating cheesesteaks while he tried to convince me that I needed to go ahead and sign with the Patriots. So, and amazingly enough, I said no. I couldn't believe it.
Man.
And yeah, exactly. Then a few years later, I end up starting at center, and we played the Jets on a Sunday night, I believe, in Buffalo, in Orchard Park. And I was having one of those games that you have. Like, there was nothing I could do wrong. I was playing really well, playing against Jason Ferguson. They took him out, put another nose in, and we were winning, running the football. And I was walking up the ramp. And you know how the two teams converge.
Yeah.
And somebody just nails me in the back, and I kind of fall forward. And I was like, what the hell? And I turn around, like, you know, you're like, okay, somebody wants to go. And there's Parcells smiling and laughing.
Jeez.
And he goes, I told you were a center.
Jeez. Look at that.
So, yeah, so that's my Parcells story. But, hey, before we go down memory lane, and I appreciate the kind words, let's talk a little bit about Sunday night in Cincinnati. I don't want to dwell on the game as much as I want to kind of morph into some other stuff, and especially what you do a lot of work in, and that's rosters and players. But kind of your general thoughts on that Sunday night game in Cincinnati.
See, I wanted to do everything but talk about Sunday night in Cincinnati. I want to get into the career of Jerry Ostrowski. Well, obviously a disappointing loss, right? 5-4. You certainly hope to have a revenge game against Cincinnati, but it didn't happen. And you're still kind of waiting for this team to get on track and find some consistency. And I found myself disappointed on both sides of the football, Jerry. Offensively, to score a touchdown in your first drive and your last drive, but the middle seven drives to come away with 3 points, and looking at the different drive enders and seeing a couple of turnovers, seeing a couple of execution issues, whether it was Josh Allen a couple of times, a few offensive line letdowns. There was just a number of things working together that didn't allow your offense to stay consistent. And the unfortunate reality is it's like 5 games in a row that there's been these big ruts and lulls in the offensive output. And it's not going away, right? So the questions continue to intensify. And I know that everyone wants to champion one particular thing that stands out to them. It's not one thing. It's a lot of different things. You could point the fingers at a number of different directions, but the bottom line is the offensive performance continues to have these ruts and lulls about them. Defensively, Jerry, I took great exception with Sean McDermott's game plan. He blitzed the hell out of Joe Burrow. Blitzed crazy, over 30%. And that's just not the book on Burrow. He's literally the best quarterback in the NFL since 2021 against the blitz. And I get it, dude. You're shorthanded with your defense in general. And so you're trying to get negative plays. I get it. But that's just not how you do it. I don't think the smart thing to do against Joe Burrow was to make the game easier for him. It's not hard when you're sending 5 and 6 and he's getting man coverage on the back end to pick out a good matchup where there's going to be space and just lace it out there. And it costs the Bills time and time again. And I know that it's hard to talk about this because I think mostly people come away from that game and say, hey, the defense gave him a chance, held him to 24 points. And, you know, there was a stretch where 4 out of 5 drives were empty possessions for Cincinnati. And you feel like that's good enough. But I don't know. Between that, I thought Sam Martin was down with his punting. You know, we talk about complimentary football. And that wasn't it against Cincinnati. And the problem is that's the same conversation we've had now for multiple weeks in a row. And you're still not playing good complimentary football. So I'm waiting for the season to get on track, Jerry. I hope it does. Seems like a lot of stuff is fixable, particularly on the offensive side of the football. But if this team's going to meet the expectations that everybody has for them, including themselves, they got to get it right quick.
You know, and Joe, you bring up a great point. And I think that needs to be 26 shirts. That needs to be Dell's next shirt, something with the term complimentary football on it, right? Because that seems to be the catchphrase this year. Since McDermott took over this defense. And I guess that's kind of where I'm wanting to go with this. When you look at the offense, and I know what complimentary football is. I know what he's trying to get at, but I'm not sure that Josh Allen is a quarterback that can thrive in complimentary football. And obviously what he's talking about is, and he made a comment of it when they came out of halftime to start the second half, our offense put us in some bad spots. Yeah. Obviously, the interception was one of them, you know, and so on. But when you look at this offense, and I have my theories on it. We'll get into it in a little bit, what I think one of the major issues is with this offense. But when you look at this offense, is this an offense that can thrive and be productive in complementary football? Or is it an offense where Josh comes in the huddle and says, okay, it's like that old joke, you know, you're the bottle cap, you're the piece of glass, hop on the second street bus, go down the third street. When the doors open, I'm going to pump fake it to you, right? It seems to be hodgepodge mismatch, by the seat of its pants, Josh Allen making plays with his athleticism. Can this offense play complementary football the way that McDermott wants it to be played?
Well, I think the offense needs to thread the needle in terms of what it wants to be. And I think you, in order to kind of really understand what's going on this year, I think you have to go back to last year where the stretch post Josh Allen elbow injury, like week 10 through the playoffs, it was a big play offense. It really lived and died with big plays. And, you know, we accused Josh Allen of big play hunting and we were begging for easy button throws and we were begging for more efficiency with the offense because for as much as you love those shots down the field, it's just not, it's not, they're low percentage throws. Even if you're great at it, it's low percentage offense. Right. And so you're not putting yourself in inconsistent places. I know the Bills were still scoring points, but it was kind of frustrating that it felt like there was so much in the way of turndowns for big plays. And so, you know, they take the offseason to assess what they want to do and what they want to be as a football team. And it seems like they wanted to lean into more efficiency. And so now this is an offense that still has some vertical shots, but Josh's percentage of deep throws, his average depth of target is way down, but what's up is his completion percentage. And we all love that Josh Allen leads the league in completion percentage. That's right. A really cool thing. But that's also in essence, what they've tried to morph this offense into is efficiency and having coverage beaters and relying on Josh Allen to process and see coverage rotations and say, yes, that's where I go with the football. And the problem is he's not always doing it. So you have execution issues. And I know that there's a lot of people that would say, well, the Bills have neutered Josh Allen and the Bills are trying to make him something that is not allowing him to be the best version of himself. But I think you need to have that efficiency component. I think you do have to do the smart thing, the smart right thing with the football sometimes, but you still have to allow Josh Allen to be Josh. You still have to allow Josh Allen to play off script. You have to allow Josh Allen to push the ball down the field. And I just don't feel like that's all of those elements are coming together right now. And so therefore you have a disjointed offense that has a lot of lulls.
Exactly. And I want to get a little bit more into that complementary football also, but flip it to the defensive side. But real quick, a word from our sponsors, and Ficta, Endel, and Elmer have been awesome. Ficta, Endel, and Elmer, I care. And let's hear a word from them.
Picture this. Crystal clear vision without the hassle of glasses or contacts. Imagine watching Josh Allen's game-changing touchdowns with absolute clarity. At Ficta, Endel, and Elmer Eye Care, we can make that a reality. Now, in a matter of seconds with Zeiss Smile technology, you can see clearly and get back to doing the things you love as soon as the next day. Visit us online at ficta.com and take our free self-test to see if you're eligible and schedule an evaluation. At Ficta, Endel, and Elmer Eye Care, we are focused on you. Go Bills.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I didn't know if you had ever heard Spence read that ad before, but I just felt that you needed the experience of Spence with his velvety
smooth
voice.
Yeah, that was smooth. I'm sitting here like, dude, can you read me a story? It's getting late. You know what I mean?
Put me exactly. Right. If Barry White ever did ads, man, that was it.
You're not kidding. You're not kidding.
I want to talk a little bit about the defense and stay on this whole theme of complementary football. And you made the point earlier, and I agree with you. McDermott's game plan on Sunday night was the blitz, 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 blitz. You know, that's fine and dandy, but we are not healthy in the secondary. We're beat up. We had a corner playing this weekend that was on another team earlier in the week that we bring in, and he actually got minutes. Blitzing is not conducive to helping a secondary that's banged up, right? So, you know, is some of the stuff that he was doing defensively putting a lot of pressure or too much pressure on the offense? I mean, obviously he's putting pressure on the secondary, but, you know, does this go both ways, or is it the offense has to always cater to the defense?
No, if you're in the true spirit of complementary football, where all units work together to help each other, it can't be that way. And I think part of the challenge is defensively. I mean, I know that the conversation just keeps going back to offensively, but defensively, this football team has not performed well. And I know that the easy thing to talk about is injuries, and that's very true. They're banged up. But nobody cares, right? Like, and I know you played in the league. Nobody cares about your problems,
right?
You know, I mean, like, they don't. I promise you, the Denver Broncos aren't sitting around feeling bad that the Bills aren't going to have Trey White and Matt Milano and Daquan Jones. Like, they know they don't care about that. And so you have to find a way to embrace the elements of what's going on and put your best foot forward. And yeah, you can understand a regression in performance, but yeah, I think that that side of the coin needs to be better. And I would agree with Sean that the offense has put the defense in some bad positions, but also how about every single game where the defense always allows that first drive touchdown? It's like clockwork. You know that first defensive series is going to be an absolute nightmare, and then score a touchdown. Well, that's not good complementary football by starting off down seven every single game, right? So, like, yeah, there's weight that has to be pulled on all sides of the equation here, and that includes the defensive side of the football. I mean, they haven't gotten a turnover. They've gotten one turnover in the last 4 weeks. They haven't intercepted a pass in five games. That's not helping your offense. You're not giving them any short fields. You're not able to play with leads, right? It goes both ways for sure.
And, you know, and the thing that I kind of want to morph into, and we talked about a little bit of this today. When you look at this roster, and we're gonna concentrate on the offensive side right now, you know, obviously there's some deficiencies at receiver. There's some people that want to add a true number two. They feel Gabe Davis isn't that guy. Diggs is a guy. It just shows the talent he has, that he does find ways to inject himself in the game and make plays, and he did that again on Sunday night. Kincaid is starting to emerge as a go-to receiver. Shakir showed up this weekend. But I think the biggest issue is offensively anyway, is the running game. I mean, there is really no consistent running game. And my question to you is this. They go out and they get Fournette, right? They bring him on the practice squad, another back, power back. Maybe they feel their running back situation needs to be better. But I kind of put a lot of emphasis. I still think we're a couple players away up front. I think Dawkins is playing really well right now. Obviously, Torrence is a guy that has tremendous upside. I think he kind of hit that rookie kind of college wall a little bit, where, you know, we still got what, 7 weeks or longer to go in the season, 8-9 weeks to go in the season. And he, you know, in college, they got three games left and then they got a bowl game. But he still shows flashes of greatness. I'm still not sure on Brown. I think Brown's played better than people give him credit for. I think Morris is a guy that's going to be contemplating retirement after this season. You know, McGovern, while playing, I think he's a pass pro guy. I don't think he's a move a guy from point A to point B, dude. I still think there are a few pieces away. I think the biggest issue right now is the lack of that running game and the fact they can't go to it when they need to, because they're just not quite as talented up front as they need to be.
Yeah, I found myself thinking similar things about just not being able – you're in ruts, right? You're looking for things.
Right.
What's out of ruts? Well, can you lean on the run game? No. Can you lean on non-Stephon Diggs in terms of, like, Gabe Davis kind of taking over for a little bit? No, you can't. So I do think a lot about those things, but I know your questions about the run game and kind of the construction of the offensive line. I think if you're looking at the construction of the offensive line and if you want to poke holes in it, I think having two non-people movers next to each other in McGovern and Morse is a little bit of an issue there.
Yep.
And I watch the tape and I see that show up, but where I also see it show up is a lot of, like, communication issues between the two of them, especially when they try to do some zone stuff, and they don't do zone a lot, but there are times where they're not taking care of the first level before getting to the second level, or, you know, Morse has to reach the three tech and McGovern doesn't even chip, right, to give him a better
angle. Right, exactly.
You see that type of stuff happen quite a bit. And then I would say there's also a very simple nature to the Bills' run scheme, which is interesting because one of my criticisms prior to really, I guess, Dorsey taking over, if I had a criticism for Dable's run schemes, is that it was just, hey, we like our numbers. We think it's just about math, and we can run a lot of zone and a lot of gap, but we don't actually have an identity as a run scheme. What I would say about this one, we know they're like the concepts that they like to run. They run tackle wrap like all the time right. in the team, and they run pin and pull, like a little bit of duo. That's kind of what they do, right? And so there's a simplicity to it, which I think is good because they dress it up in a lot of different ways, but their core concepts, that's what it is. But I think not having the people movers, right, like McGovern, Morse, but then also your right side's pretty raw. Like even though Spencer Brown has played significantly better this year, still a young player that's playing next to a rookie, right? So like I think that's where you can kind of poke some holes in the construction of the offensive line. But simultaneously, I would say this might be the best the offensive line has looked in a long time.
Right. And I agree with that, but I just feel that if they really want to get to that next level, they got to be able to, you know, they got to be able to set the tone of the game with that running game. I think Cooks is a guy that can handle it. Obviously, they don't, you know, I'm not sure if they feel they have a true number two. I guess they do. I mean, I still don't understand, and maybe you can help me on this. I don't understand the Fournette signing. I really don't. I don't know what that accomplishes. I don't know what that brings to the table. Maybe you have a different viewpoint on that than I do, but I'm still trying to figure that one out.
I'm not a big Leonard Fournette fan. I'll acknowledge that. I think what it really comes down to is a little uncertainty about Damian Harris. You pulled Ty Johnson off the practice squad. You don't have a practice squad running back, right? So before the Fournette signing, it was James Cook, Latavius Murray, Ty Johnson. That's it. And so I think you needed a fourth guy. And I think for as much as I'm not a Leonard Fournette fan, man, oh man, you could do a whole lot worse than Leonard Fournette as your fourth running back on the practice squad. And so that's kind of where I look at it. I don't think he's, you know, he's always been a bit of a disappointment. Vision issues galore. It's just a very frustrating runner to watch, but big and straight line fast and a little bit of pass pro, a little bit of pass catching. But he's, you know, from a guy that the conversation with Leonard Fournette when he was at LSU, I don't know if you remember this, but it was like, does this guy even need to play college football? Can he just go straight to the NFL? Like he's that good. He's like a top five pick. And I don't know. He's been kind of underwhelming based on the hype that has always come with him.
Why do you feel they don't run more gap scheme? Obviously, you don't have people movers. Maybe the zone's a little bit harder for them to run. I know they like the pin and pull and that stuff. Why not more gap scheme, especially running it to the right side when you can pull guys like McGovern and, you know, Deion is nimble as well. And then you got two road graders and Brown and Torrance on the right side. Maybe run a little more gap. Do you have a reason why maybe they don't run more gap schemes?
Their numbers trend more gap than zone, which is to me better than it was in the past where it was always kind of started off as a zone rushing offense. And then by the end of the year, they're like, yeah, we can't do that. Let's do gap. To their credit, I think they learned that a lot quicker this year. I do think they are a primary gap oriented run scheme. I think that a lot of some of the stuff that you want to build off of it, like you want to marry some of your pass concepts to your run schemes. I think that's a little bit easier with zone.
Right.
But I do think that they are a gap scheme. There's not necessarily a commitment to it. Right. I think that's kind of where you kind of get lost in the consistency and volume.
And it also felt like this game had, and I know a lot of people like to call everything RPO. I don't think a team runs as much RPO as people feel they do.
Yeah.
But this game did seem to have a little more RPO feel to it than in the past.
Yeah, Tampa too, right? The week before working in the run pass option. Yeah, it's funny. Commentators don't even know. There's a difference between play action, RPO, and zone read. Those are three completely different things. But I think a lot of people miss that. But yeah, I think the RPO stuff is helpful, especially when they're getting some free access looks with some off coverage. I think that's one of the areas where they've been able to help Gabe Davis, who is not a separator. Is I think teams they'll play off on him and because they don't respect his vertical speed and they don't think he's a good route runner. So they can just close and turn and carry and not be worried about it. So I think that one of the things that Ken Dorsey has done well, especially against Tampa, was say, okay, if you're going to play him like that, we'll take free access and RPO. And that's how Gabe was able to have the game that he did against Tampa. It wasn't because the guy was out there, you know, like dusting dudes on routes and winning routes. It was free access and RPOs, and I think that's how you could take advantage. But yeah, RPO stuff is generally a good thing for Josh Allen. He executes it well, and outside of one play. I don't know if you remember this. It was the illegal man downfield.
Yes.
And like, brother, you can't throw it. He paused. Right. And then he bails to the right. Like, you can't throw it. Guys are down the field. So other than that one play against Cincy, I think the RPO stuff's been pretty good.
And real quick, if you want a clue, you know, most play action, you'll see the quarterback, his head will be tucked, chin down. And if you watch the quarterback and the true RPO, you can see his face is up and he's looking at somebody, right?
The linemen are run blocking.
Yes. And the linemen are run blocking. Exactly. So if you can start picking that up, you can figure out, because like, and I agree with you, Joe, I mean, 100%, the announcers don't know what the hell if they're RPOing or not. I mean, we like to call that stuff RPO, but a lot of times it's play action. Before we move to the defense, kind of, I just wanted to stay with the offense a little longer. You look at the way this roster is constructed, and I know you do a ton of player scouting and all those types of things. When you look at this roster, does it have the talent offensively? Because it hasn't really been hit with a ton of injuries like the defense. It's had a few, knocks and whatever. But are they built to be able to do what Dorsey and McDermott want to do right now at this point?
I think the biggest issue is your number two receiver. I just think the skill set's just not there. And especially because the way that the offense has morphed into more coverage beaters, which is reliant on a route running.
Right.
And your number two receiver is not a good route runner. Gabe Davis, he's a clunky route runner. He's big and tight, and he's not the kind of guy that has separation quickness or the ability to get in and out of breaks smoothly and turn directions very rapidly and create separation, right? He's a size ball skills down the field receiver that doesn't have great speed. That's just who he is. And so when you're your number two receiver, and I know that Kincaid has certainly now kind of become the second option in the passing game, but Gabe as a number two receiver, I think you're just missing dynamic ability there in terms of separation, in terms of yards after catch. And for a vertical guy, like it's hard to make a living as a vertical guy that doesn't have speed. So right. I think that's the skill set where I look at the construction of the offense and say, you know what? I wish there was a different skill set in that spot. I know Gabe's a good guy. I know he works hard as a blocker. He's made some good plays. Production-wise, it's pretty good number two wide receiver production, but it's not about that. It's about the skill set. I think that's what limits the offense. So if there was a piece of it, I would probably go there in terms of where I would say, yeah, I think this is a skill set that doesn't really make sense for what you want to achieve offensively.
And when Joe talks about it, and I picked up on a term you used, and just for the people listening, when he talks about Gabe Davis, he says the word tight. It goes hand in hand with not a good route runner, because tight athletes – hips are tight. They're not fluid athletes. When you look at Diggs is fluid. When you look at Kincaid, he's fluid.
Yeah.
Tight athletes, tight hips. You're not a real fluid. You're more of a, you know, it's kind of like the old game where you put the pieces on the magnetic board and turn it on and they just kind of move all over the place. It's very kind of a rigid, strong guy, can get the ball, strong hands, but he's not going to win. He's not going to win catches by what he's running. He's just not that fluid of an athlete. Real quick, your assessment of Kincaid, better than you thought about what you thought he would be, or what do you think about him? Because the thing that shocked me about Dalton Kincaid is I actually think he's a better blocker than I gave him credit for. I think he's doing a better job blocking. Now, granted, he's not, Mark Bavaro, but I think when he has to in a pinch, he does a decent job.
Yeah. The willingness there, he's a competitive dude, and that's always going to help you. The receiving skill, It didn't take a big scouting background to watch Dalton Kincaid play at Utah and realize that you've got a really dynamic receiving talent in terms of the route running for his size, right? The ability to get in and out of breaks and just be deceptive with route running, to have a good feel for zone and how to adjust. But the body control, the yards after catch, how quickly he can catch a football and turn and get up the field. It's high level stuff. And so I knew what he was capable of, and just a couple of weeks after he was drafted, I put out a video and I said, look, Dalton Kincaid needs to become the number two option in this passing offense. And I was mindful of the curve, right? So like not necessarily right away, but as 2023 elongates and certainly at 2024, this is the number two most frequently targeted player in your offense. And I think the question that we all had was, just how quick, how quick would it happen? And you know, there's been a lot of commentary about the Bills and their appetite for young players and what that all looks like. And I think they gave him a few weeks to kind of incubate. He still had some involvement, right? He got catches. The yards weren't there, but now it's like it's all coming together over the last few games, and I hope that it doesn't stop for another 12, 13 years.
And, you know, because you hear all the chatter about McDermott trusting rookies to play, right? But
yeah,
two of the biggest contributors on the offensive side of the ball yep. are the first and second round pick this year by Brandon Bean. He has no problem letting those guys play.
And he really hasn't. I mean, like Josh Allen, day one starter, but well, at halftime of the Ravens right. game, Tremaine Edmonds, Trey White, Ed Oliver, Greg Rousseau. These are all like day one starters, even like Taron Johnson, pretty quickly this slot, Matt Milano, like pretty quick. Like it does happen. I think we're all victims of the moment. And so you get a draft class of Kyer Elam and James Cook and Terrell Bernard, and they're all not playing as rookies. And you start to form narratives about the willingness of the team to play rookies. Right. Well, that was a different type of draft class for a different football team. But as those opportunities have presented themselves this year, it's happening. And I think it's something that will happen more and more moving forward as, let's be honest, there's going to need to be some resets at position groups here. And so I think you're going to see more and more of a reliance on young players out of necessity. And they need to kind of replenish a lot of the nucleus. So I think that's a trend that'll continue for a while.
The last question on the offense, Joe, they call Joe Marino up and they fly you up to Orchard Park and they put you in a room and they say, okay, tell me what you want this offense to look like this week. What do you feel this offense needs to look like to be as successful as it can be?
I'd sit down with Josh Allen and say, what do you think, bud? We build the game plan from that. I tell you that, you know what I mean? I want him to be comfortable, right?
Right.
Because like for as many execution errors as I see on tape, it's not because Josh Allen's an idiot,
right?
Like, what is it? Why aren't you taking it? Why aren't you like, use a clear design for the play and the turndowns are maddening. Well, why? What is it? And so that's what I want to get in his head and say, all right, what do you want to run? Like, what do you like? And then let's build it from there. And so I'm not saying that doesn't happen. I hope it does. I mean, you probably know a whole lot more about what goes into building out a call sheet than I do, but I would hope that the quarterback has a lot to say about it, especially when the offensive coordinator was handpicked by him.
You think he's too nice at this point in his career? I mean, I think at year six.
Ken or Josh?
Josh. I think he needs to be a little more vocal. I think I have no problem if Josh Allen comes out and gets in a little bit of somebody if they're not doing right or whatever. I know the whole Diggs and Allen thing and whatever. I don't really care about that. But I think I almost feel that if Josh kind of had that same, I don't want to say fire because he does have fire. Watch the way he plays. He can peach out of his mind. Maybe I should say personality, like a Jim Kelly, to challenge his players on the sideline and kind of go in that same direction with Diggs. I think that would be good for this football team.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that or how much of it is more of an accountability to, hey, when we call this play, I need your route depth here. I need you to bend your stem like this. You know, like right. just the details of the plays. I kind of wonder, like, if that's where Josh needs to be more assertive in terms of, hey, I want it this way. I demand it this way. And if you think you're going to get the football, it's got to be this way, right? Like, I wonder how much of that is necessary.
Matt brings up a good point. You think Dorsey's a good soldier at this point and he's doing what his boss is telling him to do, or is he a little bit over his head?
I think I'm amazed by the amount of people that can answer that question with convictions. I don't know. You know what I mean? Like, dude, like I'm not trying to diminish who I am. Like I work really right. hard for these opinions.
Right.
I do. I dedicate like all day to this every single day. I don't know.
Right.
Is he doing what he's told? I mean, it's in so many different ways, like, metrically, this offense is similar, if not better, than the one Daboll ran.
I agree.
You know, so like, I don't think so. I think that Ken Dorsey's running the offense how he wants to run it. I really do. And whether we like the result or not, that's a different conversation. But like, I feel like it's so easy to point the fingers right back at him. And one thing, right. and I'm gonna have Ben Solak on my next episode of Locked On Bills. And he just did a great video on Josh Allen and the Bills offense. And one of the things, I got to pull up my notes. One second. he talked about relative measures. Okay. And this is, I thought this was a fascinating story point or a talking point for Josh Allen and kind of comparing things with Brian Daboll and Ken Dorsey. When you look at the relationship between Brian Daboll and Josh Allen, you enjoyed the glow up, right? It all happened. They went from like total wild card quarterback coming out of Wyoming to superstar, right? And so you think, oh my gosh, the glow up here is incredible. And then he hands him off to Ken Dorsey and you don't necessarily see a glow up, right? It's like kind of the same, maybe a little bit worse. You certainly, maybe there's some things that rub you the wrong way. I think there's relative measures. I think that's a really good talking point about contrasting the tenures, because like results, they're really not different. And if not, if anything, they're better with Daboll, or they're better with Dorsey, excuse me.
That was a bit of a loaded question, by the way, I have to admit.
Yeah.
And the reason why is this: I appreciate your level-headed analysis. I think that is, that's a gift you have. I think you do a wonderful job of that. Never seem to jump to conclusions or get too caught up in the moment, you know, as being a fan or whatever. And I agree with you. I mean, nobody knows unless you're in that room, right? Nobody knows what's going on unless you're there, but we can have ideas of it and all those things, but it's obvious right now. I think it's not necessarily schemes. It's not necessarily, we're not letting Josh do everything he wants to do. I think that offense is just a little bit deficient in a couple of areas. Main area, obviously, and you pointed on earlier, is that wide receiver number two position. So anyway, good to talk about the offense. A little bit of word from Picasso's Pizza, another one of our sponsors. We'll come back. We'll talk about the defensive side and get Joe's opinion on some things over there here in a moment.
Hey, football fans, the season is here. So you know that means family, football, and food. But for the NFL's best fan base, it can't be just any food. Bills Mafia only eats the best during the season. And the best is Picasso's Pizza. With four great locations in Western New York, it's so easy to treat yourself to the most flavorful pizza on game day. Picasso's, we are Buffalo Pizza, shipping local and nationwide. Order online at picassospizza.net.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, back online again. Once again, the velvety voice of...
The cup and char pepperonis, Jerry. Come on. How are we supposed to get back in this? I'm thinking about that pizza right now.
Well, you can think about it. I actually enjoyed it a couple weeks ago as our friends at Picasso's mailed us out some pizza.
Oh, man.
So I still got the cheese stashed in the freezer ready to go. That might come out this weekend when I'm watching a little bit of Tulsa versus Tulane.
Yeah.
But
I had Little Caesars yesterday, Jerry. I mean, what's going on?
Well,
it's
I don't know.
It's not bad, though. It's not bad.
Can you get good Northeast food down there where you are in the Carolinas?
So in Charlotte. Charlotte is the, outside of Western New York, it's the highest concentration of buffalo transplants.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we have, like, I can think of five buffalo-based restaurants, like, but native owned,
right?
And a lot of like comparable food. I'm not going to say it's the same, but it's comparable, and it certainly gives me the fix that I need every once in a while.
You give me some wings, a good pizza, and a fish fry on Friday night, man, I'm pretty much easy.
Your fish fry guy? I never that was never a thing I really got into, but
I'm not even, I should be Catholic. I'm stinking Polish and I'm from Philadelphia. You'd think I would be, but I'm not. I had a rogue mother that decided to go another way, but no, man, I'm a big fish fry guy. Down here, fish fry means catfish or crappie.
Yeah.
Not like you get up there. But defensively, obviously, this defense at the beginning of the season was rolling. You know, guys like Ed Oliver, who were questioned, why was he re-signed, thriving in this McDermott defense. And as of late, obviously, I think the only thing you can point a finger at is it's just gutted injury-wise. I mean, you can say what you want. You know, we're now playing guys that we brought in trades. Defensive side of the ball, injuries is the biggest story, I would think.
Yeah, you can't escape it. And you're talking your two best coverage players in Matt Milano and Trey White. I mean, Daquan Jones is probably the best pass rusher and run defender on the D-line while he was available this year. He was playing out of his mind. And those are big injuries, but it's not just that. It's Poyer's missed a game. Benford's missed a game. Jackson's missed a game. Lawson's missed a game. Oliver's missed a game. Rousseau's missed a game. And a lot of those guys are playing through those injuries. Meanwhile, you kind of thought Von Miller was going to be this like nice reinforcement into your defense, and he hasn't been that, right? So it's a banged up defense. It's a depleted defense. It's a lot of guys trying to play hurt, a lot of new pieces trying to get onboarded. And, you know, it certainly is a shell of what it looked like in those first four games.
And obviously age gets us all at some point. It seems to me after this ACL injury, Von is finally maybe showing his age a little bit.
Yeah. I've watched every snap, Jerry, and I'm trying to see the light bulb come on. I think maybe there was one good interior rush where they got him as a looper against Cincy, and he actually should have made the sack. He was kind of held there at the last second. I think they called it actually. But it's tough to watch because he doesn't have the juice and finesse around the edge that he typically has. And that's how he's always won. Right.
Right.
And he's trying to work speed to power, and like, it's not moving tackles at all. There's no presence of any inside moves. And so when you have to block Von Miller, and you know the only way he can beat you is around, or the only way he's going to try to beat you is around the outside hip, and he doesn't have the juice that he typically has, and the timing's not there with his hands as well. Like, you can see him trying to like throw his moves, and it's just the timing isn't there, right? I kind of think they fumbled the situation, Jerry. Like, when they activated him, it was a 21-day window for him to practice without having to play. And they didn't take advantage of any of it. They activated him. He played against Jacksonville. Don't tell me that he needs to like ramp up. You had a chance to ramp him up without putting him in game action. And he looks like a shell of himself. He's easy to block. He's a net negative to this team right now. I hope that changes. I don't know if it will, but I kind of feel like they fumbled that return.
Right. And I don't think, and I did it myself. Broke my tibial plateau, came back in 10 weeks, rushed it back. And it was like 7 weeks later, after most of that time, not even practicing during the week, because my knee would be blown up and then getting stuff drained off of it 20 minutes before warmups. It's really hard. And once that leg, that ACL repaired leg starts to go and those muscles start shutting down, there's nothing you can do. The only thing you do is rest. The only thing you do is sit. And my biggest issue, Joe, is I never was, and I love Von. Okay, I think Von is a Hall of Fame player. I was always nervous about the contract, and I was always nervous about possibly situations like this. And if his, I don't want to say downward spiral, but if his lack of production, if he comes back next year after having a whole year off, another offseason to rehab, and he doesn't find that juice and that finesse that he had, because as much of anything, it wasn't just that he was a superior athlete. He is a superior athlete. He is as technical as they come rushing the passer. He studies it. He's technical. He knows his opponents. And when you watch him as a former lineman, you're like, get nightmares, because there's really not much you can do that he does not know about, because he studies that meticulous. But if he can't come back and be that type of player, that contract is an albatross. Yeah. I mean, that contract is going to limit what you can do, especially, but there's two contracts. There's that contract, there's Knox's contract, that could really limit this team from going out and maybe getting that number two that they want to get, or finding another corner, or finding another offensive lineman. That's what I've always worried about with this.
Yeah, it's $34 million a year in salary between Knox and Von. In the case of Dawson Knox, there's really no good way out of that deal until 2025. And for Von, there was no guaranteed money beyond 3 years, but they've done some restructures already to it. So I haven't taken an updated look at it. But yeah, that's the reality of it. And you think about, you add Trey White to the mix. I mean, that's an $18 million a year salary that you're getting nothing with. I mean, and certainly Matt Milano is a $14 million a year player. Daquan Jones is an $8 million a year player. It's a whole lot of cap dollars that's not helping you right now. So it, yeah, it's challenging to consider all of that and what the impact of that is, not just right now, but into the future. If in the case of Von Miller, and I'd lump Trey White into that with, you know, a cornerback, a position predicated on athleticism, right? Not every position is. Corner definitely is. Talking about an ACL and now an Achilles. And that's, I mean, that's typically a robber of athleticism. And Trey White is a good athlete, not a great athlete. Didn't really have a whole lot that he could sacrifice there. So yeah, injuries are not helping, obviously, but there's the long-term implication as well for Von and Trey White.
When you, and you know, I think that's one of the things that, and they talk about New England and their run and Brady and all that stuff. But the one thing I thought Bill Belichick did better than anybody in pro football for years was, I'm going to use the term, he did not fall in love with his own. Yeah. And he never overpaid anybody because of what they did. He paid people on where they were. Yeah. And if he had to move a guy and bring in a Junior Seau and say, hey, Junior, I'm going to give you this. I don't need you to be San Diego Junior. I need you to be Junior that does these two things and does them well. They gave him limited roles that they could be successful in. Randy Moss was one of those players. The list goes on and on. Yep. And, you know, that's the thing that I worry about here. Have we got ourselves into cap jail because we rewarded guys because they were loved by the fans and what they did for the franchise in the past, as opposed to what we went ahead and projected them to be in the near future? And that's, you know, that's something that I guess you can't really ever predict that fully, yeah. But that's something that I think that is worrisome to me.
Tough needle to thread, I'm sure, right? Where you want to reward players for doing what you've asked them to do, especially guys you've drafted that have developed, that have taken those steps, and now it's time to give them a market contract. And you feel like there's probably a lot of good, not only in paying that player because of rewarding them, but you know, sending the right messages that says, hey, if you do these things, you're going to be the next guy. But at the same time, you know, it becomes more and more difficult as the roster becomes expensive. And as that happens, as resources become more and more limited, the bad deals become more costly. And so I don't think there's a long list of that right now. And I hate that a lot of it is injury, like we're talking about because of injuries. But as the team potentially has to make some concessions, you kind of wonder how they replenish. And I think a good example of that's linebacker, like where they did let Tremaine Edmonds go.
Right.
And it was a roll of the dice for Terrell Bernard. Now that's worked out, but that was a big roll of the dice. And I think you're going to see more of that have to happen with this roster, and you better have talent waiting in the wings to step in and play meaningful snaps.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that it's with the quarterback sucking up about 25%, in some cases even more, your salary cap, you better make sure you draft well. You better get all you can out of those guaranteed 4 to 5 years, you know, those 4 years, those options, because after that, you've really got to, like we did, like you talked about with Edmonds, you really got to be sensible with your re-signings and what you give to your guys, because it's just really, really tough nowadays, like I said, with so much being sucked up by that quarterback. But staying with the defense real quick, we got a few more minutes, and Joe Marino joined us from Locked On Bills. And then I'm saying Locked On Scouting, but is it Locked On College Scouting?
Locked On NFL Scouting.
NFL Scouting, yeah. And you have a co-host with you on that show.
Yeah, Kyle Krabs. Krabs is the co-host there, yep.
Yep, so great shows you can check out. Joe does awesome content, does an awesome job of research, and it's, I'm telling you, watch it. It's refreshing. But when you look at this defense now with the injuries, I know that we, you know, the Leslie Frazier, bend don't break defense was something that the fan base just, for lack of better terms, could not stand. They were excited about McDermott, excited about the blitz. With the injury situation, not only in the D-line, but especially in the secondary, do you feel McDermott needs to go back to that more cover two, bend but don't break, play more sensible stuff, and go back to our term we talked about in the first segment, play more complementary football on defense to help your offense?
Yeah, I think he's got to blitz less, but I think what he needs to lean more into is simulated pressures, which he's done at times this year, but it's kind of gotten – little bit less of late, where, you know, you're still rushing four, but it's disguised, right? You're going to send a second level player and drop a first level player. And I think they've had some success with that. They've done some good, you know, 2 and 3 man games. I think they have to lean into more of that. But I'm a big like rush 4, drop 7, like occasionally send a 5th guy. Like I think that's the best way to do it. And it's all about winning one-on-ones, right? We talk about blitzing, and it's not about getting free runners to the quarterback. It's about setting up one-on-ones, and guys have to win one-on-one. And there's a lot of instances of me watching these players on tape where there's no pass rush plan, right? Like they're not rushing the passer with skill. And like and then there's times where they're rushing not through their lanes. If you recall, Burrow had a big scramble against the Bills, right? And Von Miller flies way up the field, and Ed Oliver rushes through the A gap. He's got to rush through the B gap. It's like Joe Burrow's no dummy. He's going to take that all day long. And so, right. Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, but they got to be able to win more one-on-one battles up front and do so without committing, you know, coverage players.
Speaking of Ed Oliver, he's kind of faded a little bit over the last few weeks. Was his play early due to him, or more due to the fact that Daquan Jones arrived and was absolutely, you know, demanding double teams and those types of things? Because without him in the lineup, it seems that Ed's kind of, I don't want to say regressed, but maybe not been as productive, especially not with the TFLs and the big plays, splash plays that he made earlier in the year.
Yeah, I think it's both. It's Daquan Jones not being there. They played off each other so well, but also, well, there's probably the opportunity cost as well of going from Daquan Jones to like a Jordan Phillips or a Tim Settle, which I think is pretty underwhelming, but also Ed and his own foot injury that he's dealing with.
That's right.
As well. I know he missed one game, but like I'm aware of what the injury is. It's not gone. You know what I mean? So
Like
that's stuff that he's still working through. So two things kind of working against him. That's maybe taken away from the high level of effective splash plays that we saw earlier in the year.
When you look at this team, last question, moving forward the rest of the season, do you see a playoff team? How do they right the ship? How do they settle things down? How do we get back to where we were when we traded, you know, when we played Miami and we're in a 15-round heavyweight bout and we're throwing haymakers and taking them and giving them? How do we get back to that team?
Well, I think there's plenty of reasons to be hopeful, especially when you think about the offense, and it just all seems so fixable to me. And that gives me hope. But also, like, we haven't not seen lulls from this team in the past. I'll mention the Cincinnati Bengals. They were 5-4 last year and went to the AFC Championship game. The Bills were 7-6 in 2021, and that included a 9-6 loss to the Urban Meyer Jaguars and a 45-13 loss to the Colts, right? Like we've seen this team have some ruts. We've seen them get out of it. And that 2021 year, that was the year that by the end of it, everybody thought that was the best chance the Bills have ever had to win the Super Bowl, and they were 7-6. So I think they need to have that like watershed moment for sure as a football team. I think we keep hoping for it. And I hopefully we can look back and say, yeah, this Denver game was the turning point of the entire season. They found themselves, they put the foot on the gas, and they became the football team that we expected them to be. The challenge is the AFC is really good. And we've seen 10-win teams not make the playoffs in the AFC. And if you're going to go on a postseason run, well, you got to get there first. And you got problems in your own division. You have problems within the conference. And so you got to start doing it. You've got to start turning it on, stacking wins. You've already got 4 AFC losses, right? I mean, that includes the Jags, it includes Cincy, obviously the Jets and Patriots. Now, the Patriots aren't a threat for the postseason, but I mean, the Jets are kind of in it. I mean, they're definitely not out of it for sure. So, and you got a head-to-head against loss to them already this year. You play them in 2 weeks. So you got to flip the switch. Can they do it? Yeah, absolutely. Have they done it in the past? Yeah, absolutely. But what clues about the last 5 games can we point to that gives us a lot of hope moving forward? I mean, I guess they'll do it or they won't, but hopefully they can take the adversity that they've been through in the past and really use it for good at this point in the season and try to salvage this thing moving forward.
Well, the good news is this. There are no dominant teams in the AFC right now,
I don't believe.
Even Cincinnati. They all have issues. Kansas City, of course, has its issues. They're winning a lot of games with good defense. I mean, obviously offensively they had some things go wrong. So there is hope. If this team can turn things around and get back to being efficient on offense the way they were earlier in the season. So Joe, I'm going to give you a chance real quick. Tell everybody where to catch you and where they can watch all your stuff.
Yeah, appreciate it. Joe Marino, at the Joe Marino on Twitter or X or whatever we're calling it these days. I've got a daily podcast on the Buffalo Bills, Locked On Bills. It's free and available on all platforms, including YouTube, as well as Locked On NFL Scouting, where Kyle Krabs and I, we examine the entire NFL through the lens of team building. And so it might be refreshing for a lot of Bills fans to listen to that podcast because you're so aware of the problems that the Bills have.
Right.
Well, we talk about everybody's problems over on Locked On NFL Scouting. So those would be the two daily podcasts that I do.
Joe, I appreciate you so much. I've been wanting to do this for a long time. I respect the hell out of you. You do an awesome job. Thanks for taking the time to join us. And hey, as we always end the show, one love and go Bills.
Go Bills.